Hello and welcome back to Microsoft Learn. My name is Laurent Bugnon. I'm a cloud advocate with Microsoft. And with me today, I have Johan. Hello, Johan. How are you today?
Hi, Laurent. I'm excited to be with you today. So I'm Johan. I'm part of the cloud advocacy team also with Laurent, and I'm more focused on JavaScript.
Exactly. And I'm more focused on .NET, but nonetheless, we do everything, right? And so I'm going to also help doing the exercises today with TypeScript, Node.js and everything. But I'm really happy to have you on the call to give us your expertise, because .NET functions are just slightly different from JavaScript functions. And even though a lot of the infrastructure is completely similar, but really the language is quite different, we'll go through that anyway during the presentation. And so this is build a custom HTTP API using Azure Functions and Cosmos DB. And for those of you who were not in the who are just starting the call now, you might know that we already gave two sessions before. So this is session number three, part of a series of four. And in the previous session, we have already done some work. First of all, we have introduced Azure Functions. We had shown a little bit how to create a new one in the portal. And last time, which was last Friday, we did a session where we showed how to develop functions locally, right, Johan? And we used VS Code, right?
Yes, exactly. So we are going to go next today and see how we can use Cosmos DB, or how we can bind data from and to Cosmos DB, and this time saving and retrieving data from Azure Function from a real database.
Perfect. Excellent. And so let's talk a little bit, first of all, about Serverless September. Can you tell us more about this action that we are doing here?
Sure. As its name implies, it's an event that's for the whole month of September. So it's all things about serverless. Every day you get new contents. It's articles, videos, and workshops about serverless. And this show is also part of this event. So if you want to know more about it and learn more about what you can do with serverless tech, just go to this aki.ms/serverless-september-2020, and you will see a dev to post which will be updated regularly every day with new content as soon as it's published.
Perfect. And this is really a cool series that we have all months long. And in fact, I saw some events scheduled even later, really at the very end of the month. So this is really cool. Everything around serverless. Before we go into levels, I really would like to say hi to our moderators and our viewers. So viewers, hello and welcome. If you want to share with us and tell us more about what you're doing, and if you have questions, or if you just want to interact and talk to us, please feel free to do so. We really love it. And you can also talk to our moderators. We have Rene and we have Chris, and both of them are going to be able to give you some answers. So if you have any questions, something that you don't understand, either something technical which doesn't work as you want, or maybe some questions that we didn't answer yet, please feel free and really don't hesitate to ask, because this is kind of part of the concept. We want to have this interaction with you. And personally, I'm located in Zurich, Switzerland. My friend Johan is located in France. And we also love to hear where you come from, what is your level of experience, why are you watching this, what are you expecting from what we are showing you here, all kinds of things that help you to be better. So for the level, we said beginner to intermediate, right, Johan? What would you say? I think that a beginner can understand what we are doing. Maybe intermediate is a little bit better. What do you think here? I mean, it's not super complicated, right?
No, I think we're reviewing all the major concepts right from the beginning. So if you're just starting to develop with need to know a bit of JavaScript to be able to follow, and we are trying to explain all the concepts. So if we're missing anything anyway, just don't hesitate to ask questions in the chat, and either us or our moderators will try to answer it. So you should be able to follow whatever is your level.
Exactly. And also one good thing to know, to mention, is that if you miss something, all those talks are recorded so you can catch them. If you are watching this on Learn TV and you have a question and you want to interact with us, you can do that by switching on Twitch. So go to twitch.tv/Microsoft Developers. This is where we are right now. And there we also have a chat function, which is enabled. Products covered. So we are, or I would say we saw the Azure portal in this particular session. We are not going to use the Azure portal much. We are actually going to interact with a Cosmos DB instance using the Azure CLI, and we'll come back to that in a moment, the command line interaction. Azure Functions, of course, it's kind of the main topic of this. Visual Studio Code for local development. We did install that last time, and we did already some work in here. We are going to reuse, to review what we did last time. Cosmos DB, now this is kind of the star of this session. So maybe tell us just quickly like two or three words about Cosmos DB and why we like it.
Yes, so Cosmos DB is a globally distributed database. So that means that it's easily to have data located as close as possible to your customers to have lower latency. And so it can be faster for them to retrieve the data so they can access everything to be faster for them when they will be trying to use your application. So that's the major point of Cosmos DB. And it's also very easy to use, as you will see during this session, when used in addition to Azure Functions.
Yeah, this is really cool, and we'll see that with a minimum of code, we can already read and write data to the database. Hopefully, all the demos will work fine. Prerequisite for this session, so if you have a beginner to intermediate level, in addition, it would be good if you know a little bit more about things like web development, okay? Especially using JavaScript. In this session, we are using TypeScript, which is kind of a higher level of JavaScript with some type checks and things like that. Correct me, Johan, if I say something wrong, because I'm not an expert there.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. But if you only know JavaScript, you should be able to follow easily. That's not an issue, I think.
Yeah, I do believe so as well. This is cool. HTTP verbs. And so here, too, we have talked about that. Previously, we saw that we have a function with get, another one with post, and we even have one with put. So understanding how those words and what is how those verbs work and what the difference is between them is quite important. One very important thing is to understand that you can have in functions the exact same URL, the same route, but with a different verb, and a different function will be activated depending on the setting. So really route/URL is unique. This is quite important. Ability to navigate the Azure portal, we talked about that already. When necessary, I think it will be especially next time when we deploy the Azure function to Azure. It will be interesting to see that. This time we will not go into the portal much. Familiar with Visual Studio Code, and more importantly, the concept of extensions, because we are using extensions to connect to Azure and also to send HTTP requests. We'll review that in just a second. And understanding architecture, this was rather the topic of the first session. This time, I think we have settled on an architecture, decoupled architecture. And why don't you... Oh, and NoSQL database. Sorry about that. I almost forgot the last point. And so this time we'll talk more about Cosmos DB. We'll take also a quick tour of a Cosmos DB instance so that you can see a few things about it. Why don't you run us through the scenario and tell us a little bit more about the component that we already have, Johan?
Sure. So our initial scenario is that we're working through this series on a solution for an online shop for school supplies retailer. The issue we had with the previous infrastructure is that every time when it's the back to school season, there was an overwhelming amount of requests because everyone wanted to shop for new supplies right now. And the old solution that was a monolithic server that was running everything, the web application, the client, the database call, and the API was overwhelmed by this number of requests, and it wasn't able to follow through the peak demand for this particular season, while it was okay for the rest of the year. So what we started in the previous session is... recoding our infrastructure to separate, to split our application in a separate application client that is built with Angular. We have already built that one, and use Cosmos DB for storing all the database, And then what we've seen last time is how we could use Azure Function to build our HTTP API as a serverless solution, so it can be able to scale efficiently through the peak demands for this season.
Absolutely. No, this is really cool. And so we have already done a few things. So I'd like at this point maybe to just show the next slide, and then we'll take a short break to go back into what we did last time and just review quickly what we did in the code. And then we'll see also the finished product. So those resources are important. The first one is a GitHub repository where you will find all the source code that you need. And there is also the Angular website that you can deploy, for example, to a static web server so that you can try things out. And also the learn module. The learn module, this is where we go step by step, and it allows you to actually try everything at home without even having an Azure account, because you can create everything into a sandbox, and then after that you can interact with that for a period of 3 to 4 hours. So it gives you enough time to go through the exercises and to check everything by yourself. So let me just here show that last time we did local development, and this allows me here to stop the slides, and I'm going to show you here a VM. This is a VM in which I have been working before. It's just a normal Windows machine, no reason, no particular reason to go with a VM, I would say. But here we have already developed some things. We have created a function here called create product. And we have talked last time about things like, you know, this function.json file, which is where you define some meta information. And then here we have the TS file, the TypeScript file. And we have seen that you can extract some information from the body, for example, if it's some JSON. We also had a get function here. Notice that you see the method here, get, and the previous one was a post, which allows you to create a route. And when you have those curly brackets here, it means that it's a parameter which you are going to get from the request. So that's pretty cool. And then I went ahead and I also extended that, just like described in the code, in the module, I would say in the learn module, with another function called update. And then there is also get products. And so far, those functions are totally hard-coded, meaning that get products, for example, is going to return here an array of products, and that's going to be all serialized and deserialized to JSON automatically. And if you want to catch up with the code, you can go here to this foundation of serverless computing for developers. And I'm sure that indeed, I see in the chat now that you already have the link there. So if you click there, this is where you will go. And then you will be walked through the process of creating everything you need. And so right now we are here in setup a Cosmos DB instance. Now, because this process is taking a relatively long time, I actually went ahead and I already created the Cosmos DB instance. And now what we can do is that we can go and instantiate, or rather initialize this sandbox. So this instance, so let's see here, we have the CLI. Why don't you give us maybe a little more details about the CLI, and why do people use the CLI instead of the portal?
Personally, I also use the CLI because once you have set up your credential, it's really easy. You can easily create new resources on Azure. I think that's what you'll be using to create the Cosmos DB instance here. And that's really nice also because you're able to put up scripts. If you want to create a world infrastructure, you just create a new shell script with all the commands you need to create the various resources and delete it at the end when you don't need it anymore.
No, this is really cool. And here, one thing we can do, and by the way, you notice that this is running in the web browser, and it's actually an experience which is really close to what we do in real time, because we also have the Cloud Shell which runs in the web browser, right? So you can use that.
Yeah, exactly. So this is the same Cloud Shell that you can use when you're using the Azure portal. You have also the option to open this exact same Cloud Shell. And what's nice is that if you're using the Cloud Shell, you can have the exact same environment everywhere you are, either by using the browser or by using, you also have the option to use it when, if you have the extension installed with VS Code, you can also use the Cloud Shell from there.
Exactly. So in VS Code, we also have a terminal which can also connect to Azure. That's really useful. So here, one thing I can do, for example, is type AZ. AZ is the Azure CLI, so it is our Azure command. And then I can type here Cosmos DB and, for example, list. And this is going to show me the Cosmos DB instances which are currently instantiated in the current subscription. Now, the current subscription is actually a temporary subscription that I'm using, which is connected to this sandbox, which means that this Cosmos DB is going to disappear after another, I think I still have, let's see in the top, another 1 hour and 39 minutes. So we have enough time to do our test. After that, it's gone. And you can use the sandbox to do all kinds of things, not just Cosmos DB like here, but also an app service, or if you want to deploy your function application, which we will do next time in the next session on Friday. So this is cool. And as you can see, you can run some scripts. Now, this is a bash script. We have other options, right, Johan?
Yes, if you're more, I think maybe you're more of a PowerShell user. If you're using Windows, you can also use that too.
Exactly. This is really cool. So here I have bash. And what I'm going to do now is just instantiate here to initialize two variables, and notice that this is database name and the master key, and those values were given to me by the script when I created the Cosmos DB. And now at this point, I should be able to copy this test script, this script which is going to initialize initialize the content of the database. And by the way, you will see that it's a bash script which is online on GitHub. So I'm going to basically here obtain the script, download it, and then it's going to initialize everything. So here we see that it is running. It's just going to take a few seconds to initialize everything. You see that those items are going to be initialized in this format. So here we see the format. We have an ID, we have the item type, we have a name, description, a price, category, stock units, how many units we have in the inventory, as well as an image. And once this is done, when you have all that, this is going to be used by the website to display the items. But this is also going to be used in this case by our functions to actually retrieve everything. And so here I'm going to copy a link and show you the finished website. This is actually the correct link. Here we go. Voila. So here, notice that this is a static website, meaning that there is no server-side code at all. It's purely static. It's an Angular website. And if I click on products, then we will see the list of products. And you see that we have all those items, all those properties that we just saw right now. You can also go to administration and you can edit a product. Now, in our particular case, we didn't actually liberate this function here for the public version of the website because we don't want you to interact with the database. But when you deploy your own version of the website, it will be possible to do that as well. All right, so at this point, I think that we have seen how everything is implemented and all that. One thing I wanted to show as well is that we have this api.http file. This is something that we have been using to test our function, and we are using for that the REST client extension, which you can obtain if you go into the marketplace and just type REST client. And so we are going to use that to send those requests. So now I think that you understand everything we did last time, and now we can hopefully move on to the rest of the slides. So let's go back to the slides.
I would also mention that if you want to follow along this session but didn't attend the last session or didn't do the code or the homework we prepared in the Learn module, you can go to the GitHub link we've shared in the beginning. Maybe the mods can put it in the chat again. And you can get the code for this particular session if your focus is more on the Cosmos DB and the bindings. You can start from the same code that Laurent just showed.
Okay, yeah, that's really good to know, because like this, you don't need to redo everything. Last time, this was kind of the homework that we gave to our viewers. We asked them to implement here this get products with an S, which is returning all the products, and a put product. Right now, it's just dummy code. It's just hard coded. So now it's going to be really interesting because we are going to talk about Cosmos DB and about the bindings. So let's dive in and let's understand what are even binding. What are, you know, we have a lot of abbreviations when you are developers. We have those CRUD operation. What are they going to be? And without further ado, let's dive in and understand how we store the inventory data. So why don't you run us through those few slides, Johan?
Sure. So what we want is at the end to have our inventory data, the list of products you want to we want to sell on our website to be stored in Cosmos DB, so we can be so we can read them to display it in the website, so we can update the price and things like that.
So, interesting. And what format do we use?
For that, we will use the JSON format. So it will be a bit similar that the hard-coded version that you have in your JavaScript code.
That's really cool. So basically, it means that it's just it's what I we sometimes call document DB, right? It's a database format. It's NoSQL. It is based on a series of documents, meaning that each item is a document per se, right? Which gives us great flexibility. There is no schema associated to that. But sometimes you want some schema, in which case you want maybe to choose another version of the database, which could be, for example, Azure SQL database. So here we are using Cosmos DB because it gives us, you know, data storage very fast, very easily. It's also relatively inexpensive depending what tier you choose, right? You can have some very powerful tiers with a lot of guarantees about availability and everything, which are a little bit more expensive. But we also have a free tier that you can use if you want to try things out or even in production, right?
Yes, exactly. So that's really nice. If you want to try it with your project, you can get started and pay nothing, basically.
This is really cool. And maybe we'll take a quick tour of a Cosmos DB instance a little bit later. But first of all, let's talk about the options that we have to talk here about, to talk with Cosmos DB. And one possibility we have is that there is a REST API. And here we know now what a REST API is, right? It's a RESTful API. So basically an interface based on REST, which is, you know, this those HTTP-based requests and responses, right? And in fact, in Azure, I believe that every service that we have pretty much has a REST API, right? You can always use a REST API.
Yeah, it can be seen as the low-level API for Cosmos DB. While it can work, you can use it directly. Most often, it's not the best option, so we have also other ways to use Cosmos DB. And another option that we have is to use the SDK that is called Cosmos Client. So basically, the SDK is like a layer over the REST API, but it's easier to use. For example, if you use the JavaScript version, you have like a very simple function you can call to interact with the database without having to write this REST, this HTTP request by hand.
Mm-hmm. This is pretty cool. And you mentioned JavaScript, but I believe we have also other languages, right?
Yes, exactly. We have the SDKs are available in different languages such as Java, C Sharp, Python, and others. And also, it's not only for Cosmos DB. The SDK works with pretty much, I think, almost all Azure products we have, almost all services.
Yeah, we have really a lot of those. So every time, like in .NET, for example, if you go to NuGet, you can find those. In JavaScript, if you go to NPM, you can find those as an example. There are different package managers that you can use. And then there is binding. So why don't you run us through that? And I know that we have tons of examples later, but what are binding in just a few words?
Binding is basically allowing you to do the same thing that you would do with Cosmos Client, but with less lines of code. So basically, it's a simple way to use Cosmos DB, but it's only working when you're using Azure Functions.
That's interesting. So let's compare a little bit like the amount of code you need to do those things. So this is here a little bit of code. It looks like what we are doing in our functions. Again, I'm not an expert, but it does look like JavaScript / TypeScript thing, right, that we are doing.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly, right? So we have an import on the first line. What does it do?
Basically, you're importing all the library from the SDK, which is called Cosmos Client, and then you use that to create the connection to the database, to set up which data, which is the name of the database, what is the container you want to access, and then you will be able to access the items from this container to read and get a list, or maybe just a single product item, like here, based on its ID. And then maybe you want to update it. And then finally, you have to call a different function from the SDK to update this particular item.
Yeah. And one thing that strikes me here is that it's very well encapsulated, meaning that you don't have to mess up with an HTTP client and know the URL that you have to call and all these kind of things. But basically, the Cosmos client is taking care of a lot of things under the cover, which is pretty cool. Now, of course, some people prefer to send, you know, REST APIs, REST calls directly, and this is absolutely fine. In fact, the SDK, and I think you mentioned that already, under the cover is using the REST calls anyway, right? So at the end, there won't be a difference. But still, it sounds like a lot of code to do something relatively simple, like getting a product and returning a product. And I see that Rene is commenting about that. Yes, it's quite a lot of code, and it's quite a lot of things that you need to handle. And so how can we simplify that a little bit? Well, that looks like a lot less code, right? So what is happening here?
So basically, previously, the code you've seen, maybe that's something you may be used to, because that's called a procedural approach. Basically, you're describing all the steps you need to get access to the database, to read the data and update it, then send the final the new updates. Instead of just saying what you want to do, you have some overhead. For example, you have to instantiate the Cosmos DB client. You have to maintain the connection to the database. If we were in a function, maybe you should ask yourself how many clients should you keep around to not overload the database and not have hanging connection, for example. And it's also a bit harder to maintain. In that particular case, instead of describing every steps we want to use, we use this declarative way through the bindings, where we directly get the data we want to update. So this is the first line of this code. We update it directly, and then we just pass it to the Azure function, and the bindings will do the magic by updating the data, the specific product in the database, just like that, basically.
No, this is really cool. And so what we see here is something that we have already kind of seen last time, that there is a way using a special object called context, and there is another special object called req or request, to access some information about the function, right? And so here we are using context.bindings. And again, everything will be way clearer when we see a concrete example, but it's actually a good way to understand. And here I just want to point, don't be confused, because before we saw that there is also a context.binding data, and it's a little bit unfortunate that those words are so close from each other. But can you just remind us quickly, context.binding data, what was it?
It was to get data, but from the trigger itself, basically the request. For example, data from the root, like the product ID, or parameters from the URL and things like that. Or from the body of the request, if we were trying to receive data from a request.
Right, and here we are really talking about context.bindings, which is a completely different object, which is going to contain the binding information. And here we see also another thing is that at the last line here, we are returning something directly to the user, and something's going to happen, right? Because we have also defined, or rather we will later define, an output binding. So bindings can go in two ways, right?
Yes, exactly. Instead of returning this object here, we could also have used the context.binding object to do the exact same thing. Basically, it's two different approaches for doing the same thing if you have some output bindings, which is something that we'll explain a bit later in the slide.
Okay, excellent. So let's dive a little bit deeper into the bindings. And we have different products and all kinds of input and output sources that you can use with bindings. So here, if we go at the bottom, I believe that we have something like storage accounts, like blobs, right? We have even...
We have the table storage, the Azure Queue, the Event Hubs, if I remember correctly, Cosmos DB, then blob storage. And the final one is that you can basically define bindings of your own services. If you have custom APIs or things like that, you can create your own binding, your own custom binding, if you need if you want to have this same elegant declarative approach with your own service, and all tied to Azure Function.
Yeah, which is really elegant, like you mentioned, and it avoids that you have to mess up with the HTTP requests and all that. So all this allows you to have your functions interact with those products. And for example, one thing you can do is say, all right, I'm going to read here from blob storage and I'm going to write into tables. But you can also have bindings who read data from multiple sources, or in clear words, you can have multiple input and output binding defined. And like this, your function can do multiple things at the same time, which is really convenient, right?
Yes, exactly. For example, here you can read, for example, an image from a blob if you want to run some AI on it and maybe get a description that you put in a table storage. But maybe you want to output it in more than a table storage and maybe also send it to an event so it can be catched by another function to maybe make a tweet about that or things like that. So there are already multiple possibilities because you can have as many inputs and outputs as you want.
Right. And so we have mentioned already, we have two types of bindings, input and output. So let's review a little bit the differences between those two. So here we just happen to have table storage as well as blob storage here, but it doesn't really matter because it's always more or less the same, right? So you need to define a few things for each binding. So what are those things and the things that are the same for every binding?
Yes, for all bindings, you need to define a name, and this name will also be the property that will allow you to access it in JavaScript. That will be through the context.binding property. So then you have this name that you define to access it or write to it.
Very important properties. Then after that, we have a type.
Yes, which is the kind of binding you want to use. Every binding associated with Azure services has a specific name. For example, for table storage is table, for blob storage is blob. For Cosmos DB, we also have one. And if you define your own custom binding, you will also have to your very own kind here.
Right. And here there is going to be a little bit of work in a text file, which is function.json, to define those bindings. So you need to check the documentation to know which type you're going to use. But there is also some helper extensions in, for example, Visual Studio Code, or if you go to Visual Studio, to the full-blown Visual Studio, which are going to help you to do that. And we'll see that in the demo so that you don't need to remember everything by heart. And then the direction.
Yes, basically, if you decide if the binding you want to use is to access data or to write data to it. So you have input binding is in and output binding is out. If you want, for example, to write data to Cosmos DB, it will be an output binding.
Yeah, totally makes sense. So let's see a little bit of JSON here. And what do we see here? And where is normally this code? Where does it live normally?
So this code lives in the function.json file that we saw last time. So for every function you create, you will have the code file and this Azure function, this function.json file, which contains all sorts of metadata like we saw last time. But this is where you will also have to define bindings if you want to use them. So you also just... to be set depending of the type of binding you want to use.
All right, perfect. So I see on the Twitch stream that we had a small interruption for a moment. I hope that the sound was not interrupted. Can maybe one of the moderator confirm if they continue to hear us or if we lost something? We have basically reviewed for a while those binding information. And I believe that we can probably just go on with the information and then we'll come back to this slide in case something was missed. Lost sound as well. Okay, so maybe very quickly, Johan, can we just go through this binding information again and quickly review it again? First of all, where does this piece of code live?
Okay, so this particular piece of code lives in this function.json file that we saw last time. This is a file where you can have all sorts of metadata that comes along the code of your function, which will live in the JavaScript or, in our case, the TypeScript file that we have. So here we can specify the bindings. For every binding, we saw earlier that we have a name, a type, and a direction. And depending of the type of binding you use, you also have a few extra properties to define. So here for CosmosDB, you have to set the name of the database, which collection you want to read data from, the connection stream, so you can you're able to get access to this database. And then you can set, if you want to access a particular product, like in this case, you can set a binding expression with those curly brackets we saw also last time, like here with the product ID and the partition key.
Right, very cool. Okay, so now we understand a little bit better what those bindings are. And one thing important, and you mentioned that, right, we support also expressions. And this is really important because it's going to allow you to say, all right, when I get a given product ID, that's the item that I want to retrieve from the database. And so it's going to be quite useful. We'll see later how you can define those information. So maybe before we go on, do we want maybe to run the exercise, the first exercise, and see quickly how we can define one of those bindings and how we can get information from the database. So we are going to go back here to this VM, which is running my development environment. And as you have seen, we have here a database already. And I have copied some information, which is important. I had the database name, the master key, but possibly even more important, I have a connection string. So let's go back here to our code. And what I'm going to do is that I'm going to modify here this function getProduct. And one thing we can do, which is very convenient, is that if I go into here the Azure extension, the Azure function extension, I have the possibility to right-click on an item, a specific function like here, and I have a few helper information. So for example, I can go and add a binding. And so I'm going to select the direction first. So now we are basically returning an item to the user, but for the function, from the function standpoint, it's going to be an input binding because the information is going to flow from the Cosmos DB inside the function, okay? So let's click on in. And then after that, we need to select the type. And so here, this is what we saw before when I told you sometimes you have to check the documentation. Well, actually, if you're using Visual Studio Code, you don't really need to go in the documentation because you already have that defined here. So here I can select Azure Cosmos DB. And then after that, I need to select a name used to identify this binding. So I'm going to go back here to the module, the learn module, and I have all the instructions here. And the reason why I'm doing that is because I want to make sure that I'm using everywhere the same name and the correct name. So I'm going to use here input product for the name. So let's do that. Click enter. And then after that, the next thing that I need to say is the database name. So we are going to use here main DB, which is the name that was used when I did the setup, when I created the database. All right. Then after that, we need to select a collection. So I'm going to use data. And again, this is something that was specified when we created the connection. And then we need something which is the connection string. And here I'm going to use here connection string, which is directly here. But then later we need to still go ahead and define that, right? And at this point, I believe that we didn't do that yet. So hopefully we didn't miss a step here. And Johan, feel free to correct me if I missed something. But I'm going to just say here connection string, and then we'll see later how this thing is defined. All right, so now I have created the binding. And now what I would like to do is go back to the function.json, because this is where you said that this is all living, right? So let's go and inspect that. All right, so now we see here that we have actually it didn't quite work out, right? Because the binding, the function.json was not updated, right?
Did you maybe add the binding on get products, the other one?
Let me check. So I'm going to check, and this is totally live in front of you. No, I think that something went wrong, and I think that I didn't confirm properly. So we are going to just go through that again. So let's do add binding. It's in. I go a little bit quicker now. Let's select here. Oh, I don't have. This is, of course, a...
It was input product.
Input product, exactly. But you see, I'm very lazy. So I want to here copy things and paste. Here we go. then we are going to take MainDB as a database. Yeah, actually, well, I think I probably clicked somewhere wrong, and then because I know that we didn't finish the whole process. So let's take here connection string for the connection string setting. No, it did the same thing again. That's crazy. Okay, so weird. Okay, I'm not quite sure what went on here. This is totally weird. So maybe... Maybe one thing we can do is write it by hand, but it's a little bit annoying because I really wanted to show this demo working. So should we try one last time? What do you say?
Okay. Yes, maybe.
One last time. And as you can see, this is totally live in front of you, friends. Input. And actually, what I'm going to do is that I'm not going to use a connection string. I'm going to use... Yeah. The correct, I'm going to use the value of the connection string directly, and like this, this should fix this particular issue here. And the thing is called data, right? Data, all right. And now I want
click on create new local app setting. I think that's
yes, really. But then I need to sign to Azure, is that correct?
Yes. Because when you will define your connection string, that's where it will also update the function. But maybe that's not something you want to do now, because I think if it's only usable if you have already deployed your function.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. So here I have the different subscription that I can use, and I have one which should be called the concierge subscription. And again, this is because I'm working here into a sandbox. So this connection here is directly to the database which is running in the sandbox. So here, okay, so now I am logged in into Azure user account. So I think that the problem is because I was not logged in previously. Which is my bad. Sorry about that. I was totally confused for a moment. So now I need to specify here product ID for the document ID, and those are the curly brackets, which means that it's going to be a parameter, right?
Exactly. And we will get that from the root we just set a bit above in the function.json.
Okay. And I'm using product for the partition key. SQL query, we can leave it empty because we don't need anything here. So I'm just going to move on. And now this is working. So now what happened in the background, you maybe saw that for a very short moment, is that it told me it is retrieving some information from this database. And so in fact, what it did here is that it did the connection directly, and I don't even need I don't even have here the connection string directly in the code, which is good because it means that it's not going to be checked in or committed into GitHub, right?
Yes, exactly. I think maybe you want to check, but it should be in the local settings of the project.
Yeah, and maybe we can
create like an environment variable for that.
Exactly. So let's talk quickly about this local setting and why is it good? And in fact, you're right, it is absolutely available here. So what is this local settings of JSON and why is it gray and not green like the others, for example?
It's because, as you said before, you don't want to have your connection string committed to your repository to be shared with everyone. You want some this particular sensible information to be secret. So that's why this local settings that JSON is excluded from Git. It should be in the gitignore file because you don't want it to end up committed by mistake. And in this particular file lives various data about the runtime. And these particular values here are also environment variables that are defined for your function. And that includes also the connection string for your DB.
Exactly. And so the fact that it's now totally local and not committed to GitHub, I showed the git ignore file, so it is really not there. It also means that when we deploy to an actual Azure Function application, we'll need to specify this setting in the environment settings, right?
Yes, exactly. So we'll have also to go through this to configure it and when we'll go through the deployment step in the next session.
Right, perfect. So now let's move on and continue. So we can go to the index.ts, all right, because this is where we have the code. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go into and make sure that I have the correct file here. So this is get products. I want get product, which is where I specified the binding. The binding is here. Let's go to get product to the code. And now what I'm going to do is that I'm going to say, all right, there is a whole lot of hard-coded JSON that I can totally delete because I don't need that anymore. So instead, I'm going to go here. I'm going to say, all right, I want to get the product ID. Now this one, I don't even need that anymore because we have already established this link between the URL, the product ID in the URL, and the binding, right, with those curly brackets. I can remove here this hard-coded code. Let's indent that properly. So now we see that we get the loaded product from the context.bindings. And then after that, I see, yes, indeed, turning it off and on again, that's probably a good idea. I should probably have tried that as well on my particular problem, but this is here something else. And then after that, once we have the loaded product, we can return that. So you see that we have really simplified the code quite a bit because first of all, I don't need to access the product ID from the URL. And second of all, I'm going to access the product directly. So let's try it and see if it works. So I'm going to put a breakpoint here and then I'm going to run. And so as a reminder, you can run this here directly locally, which means that the functions are going to run local. However, the Cosmos DB is accessed in Azure. So if I wanted to develop everything totally locally, how would I do things?
You will have to install another tool that is called the Cosmos DB emulator. So you will have like a simulator of the Cosmos DB service, but locally on your machine.
Okay, perfect. So now I have here get product. You see that the URL didn't change at all. It's exactly the same as before. So I can go here in my extension. And what I'm going to do is that I'm going to retrieve a product, but I want to have an actual product which is living into the database. So I'm going to change here the product ID with P001, which is a product that I know exists. Let's go ahead and send the request. All right, you see that now I have the breakpoint. Now you might have noticed that the request took just a little bit longer and the reason is because it actually went ahead and retrieved the item from the database. So it took maybe just a few milliseconds more to actually load everything. But now the cool thing is that I have this input product, which is here. So I can go on, say, all right, I have my loaded product. I can inspect it. I have quite a few things which are preceded with an underline. Those are just internal properties for the Cosmos DB to run. But most importantly, I have writing, I have the categories, the description, the ID, the product, and everything. And if I click here on continue, then it's going to return that to me. And so you see that the API is now working and it's really working together with the Cosmos DB, which is pretty exciting. And I'm really happy that it worked. Again, sorry about the small problem we had. The problem came from the fact that I was not signed into Azure in Visual Studio Code, even though I thought I was. So that was the reason. But I'm happy that we persisted and we found the problem here. All right, so let's go back to the slides and let's talk more about those bindings. Okay, so we have use a binding to access some product. We are using the context information to access the binding from the code, all right? And so again, we have those two very important objects, context and request, right, Johan?
Yes, exactly. So the context object can be used, as we saw last time, to get the parameters from the request. But then we saw this time that it can also be used to read data from our bindings. So in this particular case, we read data from our Cosmos DB instance and can also be used, and we'll see maybe a bit later, to update and write data to the bindings.
Right, okay, so that's cool. So now we have also the possibility to return some value and basically to write something, right? So how does it work? This is with an output binding, right?
Yes, so basically it's very similar to like what we did just before with an input binding. You have to change the direction to out to say that you want, okay, now you have this product, this particular product, and you want to write it or update it to the database. And then either you can use context.bindings bindings, or you can directly return something. And in the return object you have, you specify the name of the binding you want to write from. So in that particular case, it's output product. And then you set it to the object you want to send to the database.
Right, so a lot of conventions here, right? You use the same name, and then it's automatically going to look for a binding and going to apply that. So that's pretty cool. So later we can also modify our code, our create product code to do that. In fact, why don't we do that now? And so you have the possibility at home to do update product and to use the put product. I will let you do that at home, but why don't we go ahead and modify this create product function so that we can also write to the database. That's going to be quite exciting, hopefully. So let's try that. So now what I'm going to do is go ahead and define a new binding for my function. All right. So I'm not going to save that one. Sorry about that. So I'm going to go into my functions here. And here I have my local project, and I'm going to modify things into a create product. And again, if you are following here from the learn module here, you have the possibility to see everything that you can do that. And also something which is interesting is that because those binding definitions are code, if you have something which is very similar, you can also just copy and paste it and then tweak it. So it's also a possibility. But here we are still going to use here the built-in UI. So let's go and select out for the binding direction. We are going to select Cosmos DB. And here again, I want to make sure that I'm using the correct name. So it's output product like you would expect. Then it's going to be the same DB, which is main DB. All right, then we have data for the collection. You see that I'm extra careful this time and double checking everything. And then after that, we are going to say, do you want to create the Cosmos DB and the collection? Now, this is pretty convenient because directly from here, you can actually automatically create something. Do I understand properly here?
Yes, if you're trying to write an item to a database or a collection that hasn't been initialized before, if you set it to true, it will be created automatically the first time you try to write an item to this particular database and collection.
That's pretty cool because it really simplifies your process. But here in our case, we know that we have this database, so we don't need it. And I can use, this time it's properly initialized, I can use the setting from local settings.json. So I'm going to use here this connection string. Then we have, again, the same thing, which is a partition. I'm going to use here product, which is the name of the partition we specified when we created everything. And then the collection throughput, which we can leave empty. All right, so now we have a new binding which was created. You see that it is very similar to what we had before. Really, the main difference is really the direction here, right?
Exactly.
Okay, very cool. Now, the name is called Output Product, and that's going to be important when we modify the code. So why don't we do that now? I'm going to go here into the TypeScript file, and here what I was doing is that I was getting here a product to create from the request as a, in JSON format. And then after that, I was just returning it. Now, that's pretty cool, and we can leave that this way. But what we are going to do is that we are going to add an additional output, all right? So we have here the body. It means that we are still going to return this item almost as a confirmation to the user. But if I add here this line of code, and I'm going to make sure that I am
at the right there.
No, that's exactly what I was saying. I need to make sure that I made the right...
right. In there, you're setting context.res directly instead of returning an object. So maybe you could try just copying...
Copy the whole thing, and like these things are going to be easier. So here, yeah, this is an important thing that you mentioned here, is that instead of... why is it all red now?
Maybe because you may need to add a type at the top of the bottom, because I think it didn't add a return time before.
Yeah, that's
go to the top of the function.
That is correct. This is something that we missed here. So, and in fact, it is totally standing here in earlier on, right? So we missed that. So let me go back here, previous, and loaded product. No. Where was that now? I know I totally remember that there was one place where I had to do that.
I can get through it if you want.
Yeah, okay, let's do that. After all, you're the expert, right? So what do I need to return here?
So go at the top of the function when you're saying like this async function at the top. Just after the parameters on the right, I think it's hidden a bit.
Yes, exactly. So let's go here. And this is from Infovoid, right?
To void. So maybe here you should be defining your proper interface for the object you're trying to return. But here we'll say, just to save time, we'll type any. But that's not something you may want to write in your production functions, because like doing this, you're just disabling the type checks in TypeScript.
Mm-hmm. And so here we totally saw what was happening, right? Because here I'm promising any, which means I'm promising just any object. But before I was promising void. And so void doesn't actually go well with a return object, right? And so TypeScript was telling me exactly what was happening. So this is really convenient. And we see that it's one of the advantages of using TypeScript over, plain old JavaScript, right?
Yes, exactly. It can perform some checks. So in that case, we disable the checks for the return values. But if you made some other mistakes, for example, if you were trying to set a string instead of an integer or something like that, it will catch the error and you will know it before going to production.
Perfect. So what I'm going to do now is prepare here a new item. And here I'm going to just give it an ID which I know is not already available in the database, because otherwise we are going to have a problem. And as you can see, this item is a product. It's called Hello World, which is kind of an interesting product. The price is $999, which is totally a bargain, believe me. We have 100 items. I'm just going to use the same thumbnail image. It doesn't really matter. And so let's try to run this to see if it works. So I'm going to put here a breakpoint. I actually already have a breakpoint, and I'm going to run this. And here we go. And so the URL is again still going to be the same. It's the post method, which is using here create product post method API/product. So this is what I have here. And so now if I'm posting that using here the extension, the HTTP extension, let's go and run through that. So I'm going to say, all right, does it work? So I have a product to create, which is extracted from the body of the request. I'm going to make that a little bit smaller. Then after that, we are just going to return. And so let's see if we get an error or something. It seems to be actually working fine, all right? Something happened. You notice maybe if you were very attentive that there was a small delay before I actually saw the response. And again, the delay is caused by the fact that we did write to the database. And so now one thing we could do, for example, is try to go into, let's see if we can go into the portal with the correct subscription. Let's try that. So here I'm going to be with my subscription most probably, which is not going to help. So let me see. Usually we have a link here which allows us. Here we go. Yeah, that's the link here. All right. So now I am into the link, into the portal. And the reason why I selected this link here is that I wanted to make sure that I'm selecting the correct subscription. And actually, it didn't do that here. So that's cool. My computer is so slow. Yes, it's actually Azure, which was a little bit slow here. So it's not my computer directly. So I'm not sure if I can totally go and see this this item. But one thing we can do, and why don't we do that now, actually, for the exercise, we can go and implement get products with an S, right? And like this, this is going to help us to see. So get products is going to be very, very similar to get product without an S. So if I go to... here to the JSON file, and I'm going to reorder things to have a little bit more space. I can totally go and copy that binding information, right?
Yes, and exactly.
And then paste that here. So hopefully I'm not going to do any mistake. So one thing that we also notice here in the function.json is that the result as well as the requests are also defined as bindings. So really in functions, you could say that every input and output is a binding, right?
Yes, that's completely correct. And we saw that we are defining the response to the request exactly the same way that we are defining the output product just before.
Right. So now the only difference that I have here, it's still going to be an input binding. I'm changing the name to have an S because I'm kind of a stickler this way. I like to have things which are precise. So we are going to have multiple input products. The database name, collection name, connection string didn't change. The only thing I did is that I removed the ID because now I'm not interested into one specific ID, but I'm interested into all the products. And the rest should be just the same. So let's see if it works. I'm going to start that. And then we will also see if we have this additional product, which was called P099, if you remember. So everything is starting up. All right. Okay, let's go. Now I'm going to go here and look at the request, which is, I believe I had one here. All right, so it's a very simple request, as you can see. So let's click on that, and then we'll see what happens. It's waiting. It's basically retrieving quite a lot of information from the database. And now we see that we succeeded. We got all the items from the database, which is... Oh, no, we didn't, because I didn't change... I'm sorry, I'm so distracted today. This is crazy. Let's stop that. Of course, I need to change the code a little bit, right? I was still returning some hard-coded things. So let's go and change that. And really what I want is say that these loaded products are going to be, so run me through that, please, Johan. I need to write context.
Context.bindings, right? Because you want
bindings. Yeah. Perfect. And I think it was input product, right? And so now it should work, hopefully. All right. Mm-hmm. So last time I was very happy to see some hard-coded data. This time, hopefully, I will be very happy to see some real data. Let's go with that here. Okay, it's starting again. And once this is done... And so the small delay that we noticed was probably due to the fact that my PC is indeed a little bit slow. It's actually a relatively old PC that I need to update. All right, so now I am inside the code. Let's click here. And now we see that we have a list of items, but this time I promise you those are real items. And in fact, we see the difference because we have 10 different items. And notice that the last item is called P099. So not just get products is working, but in fact, the create product output binding that we did before seems to be working as well because I was able to modify the database. And I think that here we should have some fireworks and confetti on the screen. So as a homework for you, you can go ahead, follow the instructions in the learn module to also write the update product function. We are not going to do that here because we have more things that we want to show you. And we really want to talk to you about security, right, Johan?
Yes, exactly. And security is really an important aspect when you're trying to think of developing an API, because you really want to be sure that only the people you want to access your API to have this particular access. So we will go through the different aspects of securing an API, and then we'll show you how to you can prevent unwanted access, but only during development. We'll give you some resources to help you with doing that for production, but that's not something we can cover in the limited time we have.
Okay, very cool. So let's see that. So there are two kinds of API users. I think we can say there are two kinds of people, period, right? There are basically, you know, friendly people, nice people, people who, you know, would do everything to help you and all that. That's kind of you and me, right? We are very friendly people. Exactly. Our moderators are helping you right now in the chat. And I see that there is some interaction going on. And so this makes me very happy. Don't hesitate to ask questions and tell us what you if there is something you don't understand. Great people, fantastic. But then there is also, you know, the others, right? The people who cost us a lot of time and money because we need to secure everything that we do. And if, for example, in our inventory case, somebody could go hack the database, right? Like we see in, you know, in CSI where they do all their hacking things and then change the price. And for example, say that a particular item is 10 times cheaper or even $0. And then they go and buy it as they can. So we need to protect from those. And really, data breach is not a joke, right? I mean, I'm doing a little bit of a joke here about those users, but it costs a lot of money, multiple millions. So you definitely don't want that. And how can we go ahead and secure that? So why don't you give us some aspects of securing an API?
So there's really different aspects when you think of securing an API. First is the access control, is to think about who you want to be able to access your API, maybe define some different role, different kind of users and profile for that. The second aspect, especially because we are using functions and functions are really good at scaling, and because you pay for what you use, if you do not have maybe some solution to make sure that only the correct people will use your API, if you have like a lot of unwanted traffic, you will also have to pay for it. So throttling to make sure also nobody is able to abuse your API by like making millions of requests that are unwanted at the same time and making you pay for it is also another important part. Then making sure also to inspect and check the data you received from the user. For example, maybe if someone may try to forge unwanted data in the request, maybe to try to abuse your system if you did not have checks for that. And also, of course, the last piece is monitoring to make sure everything is always going well with your function. You do not see like spike of traffic that you did not expect or unwanted write to your database.
And this is really something that we can also take a moment to define and to precise, is that Azure Functions, they seem very easy to use. You deploy your code and it just runs, but it is still a part of the whole what we call app service environment in Azure, which means that you're going to have the same monitoring features and functionalities that you have when you run an actually full-blown website. And this is really, really powerful because this is all part of Azure Monitor, what we call Azure Monitor, which is our monitoring solution, which gives you information on everything. So even though it's a serverless function, which you know, in which you don't really have to worry about the server, we are still going to collect some information about the server. We are going to collect some information about your function application, about the function itself. You can also instrument your function, for example, with logs, like you might have seen into the you know, into the code, right? We were logging things, and all that is collected, it's saved, and then you have tons of possibilities to actually use this data to do some graphs, to do some queries, to do maybe to export that, to do some Power BI if you want to monitor everything which is going on. So it's not just you know, a simple environment to which you deploy code and then you forget it. It's actually a full-blown environment, production environment, in which you have tons of monitoring possibilities. This is really, really very powerful. And so if you want to know more about that, we have here a whole Learn module actually it's a whole learning path, even more interesting here. You see that it's almost 6 hours about securing your cloud application in Azure. If you want also to know more information about securing your data, for example, we have also a similar learning path for securing your data in Azure. So really tons of learning possibilities here. And there is also another thing that you can do is, prevent unauthorized access, right? And that would be during development time. So how does it work?
Yes, most often it's something that's overlooked because the first thing you want to focus on when you're thinking of security is your production environment, and that's like a complex subject as we've just explained. But something that is easily forgotten is like also you need to secure the access during the development, because we will also see that more in details in the next session when we will deploy our function to the cloud. As you just said, once your function is deployed, even if it's a test environment, it's like a full-blown environment that is in the cloud and that you pay for it. So you really want to make sure that you have at least some level of security and that it's not open to everyone to access.
Right. Yeah, this is really important too, because you pay for what you use. And so if people are bombing your function application with requests. And so there are a few things that you can do when you deploy a function to Azure to secure the access. And that would be what we call the authorization level, right? So how does it work?
So this particular setting, we saw when we created the function two sessions ago, that you can choose which authorization level you want. So the first one is the one that we used is anonymous. That means that basically you don't have any level of security and anyone is able to access your function. But now what we will be more interesting is that you can have a function level access. Basically, it means that you will be able to define a key that is required to be able to access this particular function. You also have the option to use a host key, which means that it's not per function, but you can have one key that can be used to access all the functions from your function app. And something that you may want to be wary of is that also you can have an admin key, which is a master key that you cannot revoke. So you must have to make sure it's not used in a client app or something that will be sent to the user at some point, because it allows to do more than just accessing the function. It also allows you to access the REST endpoint that allows you to manipulate the properties of your agent function, such as modifying the settings or things like that. So this is mostly not useful for you, and it's only for a very specific use case, and you really want to be careful when manipulating the master key here. But what we mostly want to use is like a function level for the authorization to make sure you have some key to protect your function when you want to access them during the development.
Right. And after that, and we'll see that, next time when we deploy the function, we have the possibility to pass the key when we do a request, for example, in the URL. But even better, you can also pass it as a header information. I like that very much, because if you have HTTPS and you have the key into a header, it's pretty safe, and like this, it's pretty hidden as well. Now, of course, this is only one small part of the whole security aspect. And again, right, like René mentioned on the chat, security is very complex. So make sure to check the different things that we have around security and to learn how to secure your function. But this is a good step to do. However, this is not going to be visible as long as we don't deploy, right? This is only working when the function is actually running on Azure.
Exactly. You won't be able to do anything when you will be working locally, because of course locally it's only you on your machine that will be able to access it. But once you deploy to the cloud, if you use Anonymous, that means basically everyone on the internet can access your function. So you must have to be wary of that.
Yeah, and one thing that we also need to remember is that you don't just have human users on the web, which maybe wanting to crack your function, but you also have robots like, for example, Google search robots or Bing search robots, all kinds of robots who are literally trying every possible URL to get some information, not for for a bad purpose, but just because they want to build their index and they want to say that, okay, this URL is public and so it should be indexed into Google search or Bing search. And of course, every time that this happens, this is going to cost you a little bit of money because your function is going to return. So by protecting the function with, for example, with a function code or a function key, you avoid that this happens because it's just going to be rejected by the function runtime. And in fact, we see that here. So you need to change the auth property into the binding. Now, remember that this binding here is a special type of binding. Well, it's actually exactly a binding like any other, but you see the type is HTTP trigger. So it means this is really the trigger information. And then after that, if the function code or the function key is not found, it returns unauthorized, right?
Yes, exactly. And the nice thing about that is that not only it's able to filter the request you don't want, is that when it will be returning like this unauthorized request, because your code won't be called at all, like we saw in the very first session, that also means that you won't be charged for it. Basically, it costs nothing for you to have this kind of filtering in your authorization level.
Mm-hmm. And this is really cool. And here we see exactly a parallel with the first time. Actually, I think it was in the last session when we changed the methods, right? This is where we saw that if you don't have the correct method and the correct URL, you get a 404 not found. But that is still not hitting your code. And here we have 401 unauthorized. It's still not hitting your code. And so you don't pay because your code is just not running, which is kind of the consumption principle of functions. This is pretty cool. And so I already kind of mentioned that, but we can mention it again. If you want to give this code to your function, and here the code is a little bit funny. Usually it's a long string of numbers and digits and characters. But here you have two possibilities, either as a query parameter, or you can pass it in the headers, which is my favorite way to do things because it allows me to hide things a little bit more. So very good to know. And notice this X functions key, which is the name of the header, X being an extension of the standard headers that you have that we use here for the functions. All right, so let's go into the exercise. And I'm going to go back to my VM. Here we go. And now, in order to do that, so first of all, I'm going to clean up a little bit because, again, I have a small screen here because I am streaming in 1920x1080. So one thing I can do, I'm going to go and simply secure my first function, for example, getProduct, by changing here in the function.json, right? This is where I need to do things, correct?
Yes, exactly, yeah. And you, right, you can so see that you anonymous. Already have the auth level set to anonymous in there. So maybe that's what you want to change here.
So I should change to function, I believe, right?
Right.
Okay. Now, to be clear, this is a simple change that I'm doing here. But if I run things here locally, I won't see any difference right now. This difference is going to be noticed when we deploy to Azure, which we are going to do in the next session, which is happening on Friday at the same time as today. So make sure to check it out. And this is when we will see where this thing is actually running. Now, since we are here in the VM, I'd love to take a second to actually show you I'm going to do that from my own portal here. Let's go here. And what I'm going to do is that I'm going to show you an instance of Cosmos DB, which is running in the portal. And to be clear, this is not necessarily something that you have to use here, because again, we have pretty much everything which is running already. But I'm going to switch this on so that you don't see my secrets. Voila. So here I'm logging into my own subscription, and into my own subscription, like you would expect, I have a certain number of a Cosmos DB instance is running. And so here we are in the portal. I could have done that from the CLI as well. And one thing I can do is go and see all the Azure Cosmos DB in my favorites. And you see that I have a few running here. For example, I have here this Cosmos DB, which is running a Mongo API. And so Cosmos have multiple APIs. We don't go too much into the details here because it's outside of the scope of this course. But basically, you can run here multiple APIs, multiple document models as well. And one thing you can do, for example, is go and explore your data. So here I have a data explorer, which is directly built into what I have here. I can go and explore. See, here I have a database. In that particular case, the database is not super interesting because it seems to be empty in that case. And in fact, it tells me you should add a new collection. So that's cool. But a few things that you can do here already is, for example, see this replicate data globally. So why don't you explain to us a little bit what's going on here?
Yes, we said it, like I think a bit shortly when introducing CosmosDB, but CosmosDB, the main point is that it's a globally distributed database, meaning that your data can exist in multiple data centers all around the world. And in this page, you can choose where you want your data to be available from. You can click different region, and that means when your user will try to access the data, it will be like the shortest path to them that will be used, so they can have better latency when using your application. Of course, each time you activate a new location around the world, it will cost you more money because that means that your another replication of your data will be available in a completely different data center for performance reasons. But that's quite a nice thing if you have customers all around the world. You can have like it's basically the same thing as a CDN but for a database.
Yeah, exactly, something like that.
Yeah, and here we see that I have made for like static content, but with CosmosDB you can have that for dynamic content that you can update and write to dynamically, basically the same way you use it for a CDN with static content.
Mm-hmm. Because here, notice that I have actually activated multi-region writes, which means that I am able to write to different regions. And you see that what it means is that the user who is located, for example, in Australia is going to write to this Australian instance of my CosmosDB. And then the data is going to be replicated. And the replication is going to happen using here one of the five different default consistencies that you have, which means that you can totally choose how your data is going to be replicated, either saying, okay, I want to write and forget as fast as possible, and then I know that it's going to take some milliseconds to replicate, or you say, no, I want that when my write function comes back to the user, that the data is already replicated. So we have all those different models here. Another thing I want to show, and that's going to be all for CosmosDB for this session because it's not the point here, but that we have metrics here. And very interesting, we have, for example, metrics on latency. Like we mentioned before, one of the reasons why we have this global replication is that when you have that enabled, we guarantee 10 milliseconds or less of latency for read operations and write operations. And we also guarantee, which is pretty unique in the world of databases online, we guarantee 99.999% of availability. So I made the test once and or the calculation once, and you might know that it means that the database may be off for less than 6 minutes per year. So it's really a very high availability that we can reach here. Notice that right now it's at 100% availability like you would expect. So we have a lot of advantages in using CosmosDB. Like I mentioned, when you create a new CosmosDB, you can actually select a free tier. The free tier is limited in the number of operations that you can do, but it's still good to know if you have a small project, you can actually run CosmosDB for free. Hopefully you like what you see. Let's go back to the slides to recapitulate a little bit what we did. So first of all, we have talked about all kinds of things. We have implemented our HTTP API, which is connecting with CosmosDB. Remember that you still have a little bit of homework to do, which is implementing the update function. And I'll do that until Friday, until next time, so that we have a complete solution that we can then deploy and run to Azure. And maybe we can just quickly remember what we talked about. So Johan, what did we talk about and what did we do?
So in this session today, we saw that you can use bindings to access and write data to CosmosDB. So you can do all kinds of create, read, and update operation on our API very easily with like a lot less line of code that if we were using like the Cosmos client SDK. So that's one nice thing to have with Azure Function, is that you can basically just declare what data you want to read from and where you want to write it to, and you can access it then very easily with a lot less line of code that if you would need to use a procedural SDK like the classical way. And then mm-hmm. we saw also how we could prevent unauthorized access of the API during development once we deploy the application, even if it's for testing only to Azure Function, it will be available in the cloud, so it will be available to everyone. So we saw that using at least a function key can be useful, so we can prevent unauthorized access to that once we will be deploying our function.
Right, that's really important and something that everyone should worry about, even during development time. So again, the resources for this series of sessions, we have the GitHub repository. If you go there, you will find the whole code as well as indications on where to go for the learn modules that you can use for the exercises. The whole code, including the function code, but also the Angular website code. So if you want to try this Angular website by yourself, you can do that as well. You have here the learn module where you can follow step by step. And if I had done that, I would have had less problems. I was trying to jump a little bit faster, but really go through the learn module step by step, because it's very precisely and very clearly detailed. And kudos to our authors who have created that, the learn people, who are really amazing content creators. So we have here resources, and here are the next sessions. So we still have one session to go, which is next Friday, September 18, at the same time, 8:30 a.m. PDT. So that's 5:30 p.m. for Johan and myself, because we are in the Central European time zone. It would be 4:30 p.m. in UK, and I believe it is something like 11:30 a.m. in Eastern time zone. And this is when we will talk about deploying an HTTP API to Azure Functions. And can you just give us like a quick spoiler? What are we going to use to do that?
For that, I think we'll be using like the VS Code extension we just used also today for creating the bindings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then we'll talk also a little bit about automation and talking about GitHub Actions and things like that. So it should be quite interesting and definitely cool to see our API running, on the web, because as long as it's not using an Azure Websites.net URL, it's not finished. So you want to make sure that you finish that, and localhost is only as good as showing to your friends and your family. Again, a reminder, Serverless September, this is a huge initiative that we have at Microsoft into the DevRel, and we have tons of articles, videos going out. This stream is part of that as well, and make sure to check it out if you go to this ak.ms. And also, if you have additional questions later that you feel that we haven't covered, or maybe we have been a little bit too fast on something, feel free to send us tweets. Johan, your tweet, how do you say that? Sindied. Sindied, okay, so that's pretty cool. And myself, El Bunion, it's a little bit more, less funny and interesting, but it does work as well, I promise you. So if you go there, our DMs are open if you don't want to tweet to the public, so you can also talk to us in private. Make sure to let your friends know that this series is going on, your colleagues, and maybe your mom, who knows, right? Maybe she likes functions as well. If she wants to catch it up, everything is recorded and you have also access to that. Thank you so much for watching. Johan, do you have some famous last words?
Sure. So thank you for being with us today. And if you maybe was late to the session, or if you missed the previous one and want to catch up, all these sessions are available on Twitch if you want to see the recordings, or if maybe if you want to see it one more time and go along to do the exercise at your own pace at home, you can just rewatch the session at any time. And again, don't hesitate to ping us on Twitter if you have any question, and see you next time.
Absolutely. Thanks again to our moderators. Thank you to all the viewers. And thank you for attending this session of Microsoft Learn. It was building APIs, HTTP APIs using Azure Functions and Cosmos DB. Thank you for watching.